Shalom, Saints. Welcome back to another episode of After Hours. Much obliged once again. Thank you very much for joining me. First of all, I just want to say thank you to everybody that contributed with regards to the last episode, both in real life and online. I had a lot of opinions come my way off the back of that, and rightly so. And part of my job is to get into perhaps some of the more ambiguous elements of the public domain, particularly when it pertains to biblical principles and personalities. And so I often encourage folks to get involved on the comments and to weigh in with their opinion, because it may well help us form a stronger point of view if we look at different perspectives. So I welcome that. I genuinely welcome that. And, you know, I always encourage people to get involved, and I read through all the comments, and it's great. Like, I'm still hugely enamored by the fact that people watch the show, you know, very humbling indeed. And also that it does invigorate a genuine, conversation, both, in day-to-day life and online. So it's cool. It's cool to do that. And I'm happy to be part of that process, because, you know, it's good to be wrong. It's good to be humble when we don't know the full picture of certain things. And, you know, I'm at a point where I'm happy to concede or not have everything right, and to not have all the answers. And today's show, we're going to be looking at some pertinent and perhaps personal elements of the faith, which frankly, I probably have more questions than answers to anyway. So with that being said, yeah, we had a really good like blend of contributions of people that were you know, touched and understood about the mystical elements of the faith and how it's easy to become enamored by them. It blows my mind to think that the people take the time to write some really like eloquent stuff. We've got Jason Argonaut 6798 talking about the psychology of the vernacular involved and how that's bled into general consciousness. Like, it's like that, it's some deep meditations in this, like, and it's just really cool to see. We've got a comment, give the guy a break, he's literally a baby Christian, and this is pertaining to Russell Brand in the last show. He's literally a baby Christian, expect bangs and falls. Shout out Rami, love you bro. Like, I would never hold a new convert to a standard publicly like I did with Russell Brand in the last show. Of course, I completely agree with that, and don't have any problems with how we treat new converts and, you know, the expectations we have. I mean, forget the new converts, like the expectations we have on seasoned converts is probably up for grabs as well. So yeah, absolutely, give the guy a break. There would still be some that advocate that I was probably too soft on the guy, but the difference being, for me personally, when it came to that episode, when believer or unbeliever alike, if you're in the public domain, it's fair game, essentially. Just like I put myself on here, I'm fair game for opinion and different perspectives. So that's how I treat any individual, and particularly when it comes to a biblical stance. I think everybody's entitled to a viewpoint, and somehow I managed to have this platform to share mine, and that's the only difference. So yeah, absolutely, I'm happy to be proved wrong on that subject. What does the word say? We shall know them by their fruit, and so we just have to wait and see. Right, so with that being said, let's crack on to today's episode. So I came across an article a few days ago, and it kind of just opened up a bit of a pocket in terms of opinion and feeling. As I said at the top of the show, I may be touching on some subjects and some areas that are sensitive, and that may be close to your heart. You may know people who are affected by the themes that I'll be going through today. I literally have no individual in mind. I have no direction in terms of personnel with regards to this subject, but I do feel like it's as the trajectory of modern day pressures escalate, it's good to have a dialogue and an honesty about the challenges that we face as believers. Because although we're in the world and not of it, that doesn't mean to say that we have received a golden pass to say that we are not subject to the pressures of the world. So today's episode, we're going to be looking at areas of kind of like mental health, depression, anxiety, and things of that nature. So as I said, you know, I'm going to be talking about certain things that you may find upsetting or triggering. You know, it's not my intention to offend, to belittle or anything like that. And as I said at the top, I've got more questions than I have answers. I just want to create a healthy dialogue, both on here and in real life, with regards to how we deal with certain elements of the pressures of the world. So the article that got me triggered in this, it's from The Telegraph. Gen Z has lost the ability to manage basic adulthood. Now, we're obviously to train our children in the way so that they do not depart from it. And obviously, we're going to be looking at this from a secular perspective. But as I said, just because it is secular doesn't mean to say it doesn't bleed into our day-to-day. Do you have a teenage daughter who freezes in horror if her phone rings? Is your son still living under your roof, aged 32? Do your student offspring now have so many unread emails clogging up their inbox that they've decided to abandon it, like spooked song thrushes deserting a nest of eggs because it feels less overwhelming to start all over again with a new one? Well, if so, congratulations. Your brood of overgrown babies are perfectly normal. By today's standards, scant consolation, I agree, but at least we all share the blame. Before I go much further, I'd like to say in my defense that I'm not what is pejoratively labeled a boomer. I'm Gen X, born between 1965 and 1980. Somebody has written this is actually older than me. That's good. We're supposed to be the cool ones, and I think I'm pretty cool. I inhaled people. Not literally people. I inhaled people, in reference to Clinton's famous quote about inhaling the joint. Nevertheless, the nagging suspicion is starting to take hold that somewhere along the line, heck, I even did one of those once in a Hamburg hotel room of all places and was horribly sick. We have gone very, very badly wrong in our attempts to hand rear the house train generation Z, now aged between 12 and 27. In fact, I'm beginning to think that the Z stands for zero, as in zero expectations of life delivering any of the things that they thought, not unreasonably, would be part and parcel of becoming a newly fledged grown-up. So why strive for maturity if they can never follow in their parents' footsteps? I might have to have a quick pause there if you need to just have a quick Google of all the generations, XZ and all the rest, because I always forget. I'm just generation forgetful, I guess. After university in Edinburgh, I rented a room in a flat, then bought my own place by the age of 26. A year after, I exchanged a fistful of notes for a secondhand car and so on. It wasn't a cakewalk. I couldn't afford furniture or decent tires, largely subsisted on a hula hoop salad, a dish I invented that involved excessive amounts of raw onion, and I'm not sure I had so much as clapped eyes on an avocado. It's great because there's many people I've known who have been successful in life, believer and unbeliever alike, who start with rough beginnings and do come into a degree of success where it comes to material comfort or financial stability. And nine times out of ten, they've come from a really hard place. So that's comforting to know. But in the them versus us mythology that fuels much of the current intergenerational resentment, I had it easy. And so generation rent is given away to generation resentment. I think that's a hat tip to the temptation to say, well, my generation had it so much worse than you guys. So I don't know what you're complaining about. In an age of stratospheric rents, unobtainable deposits, a cost of living crisis and rising stress levels, a combination of poor mental health and strapped family wealth has trapped huge numbers of young people and by definition us in a weird stasis. According to data just released by the Office for National Statistics, a third of all men under the age of 35 still live with their parents. The figure for women is less than a quarter. To be honest, that only confirms a trend we've all noticed. Social media and problem... Now, social media, we're going to be touching quite heavily on that today. Social media and problem pages are awash with anguished parents wondering if they should broach the subject of money with their great big kids who are living, eating and using up all the hot water rent-free despite being in full-time employment. If we were Italian, of course, we'd love having our sons to mollycoddle on an ongoing basis, but culturally it's a very foreign form of arrested development. One friend of mine says she is sorely tempted to charge her son board, if not lodgings, but then worries that if she does, it will not just cause ill will, but will take him longer to save up for a deposit and move out permanently. Another is mulling over the idea of turning militantly vegan in order to hasten her carnivorous 26-year-old departure. So we've got a picture where it's a big, bad, expensive world at the moment, and getting a foothold in what would be traditionally a ladder-based approach to life is becoming increasingly more difficult, and subsequently families, parents are having to, basically... keep their children for longer because they're not developing in the ways that they should be. It was back in 2008 that US writer Kelly Williams Brown, then 24, neologized the tongue-in-cheek verb adulting to describe the everyday tasks such as laundry or grocery shopping that were the hallmarks of maturity. Millennials, who are now aged between 28 and 43, embraced it wholeheartedly. Generation Z, from England, never used it, not even ironically. It's not in their vocabulary or their hopes and dreams. Instead, their focus is inwards, so much so that a quarter of 18 to 34-year-olds have never answered their phone. Why? Because apparently it's too much pressure. The study by comparison site YouSwitch also revealed that half of them regularly blank calls from their own parents. And we are very often the ones paying for the damn thing. I think it's fair to conclude that if the psychologist Maslow were around today, his hierarchy of needs would be very different. In the olden days, there were five tiers in the pyramid. Physiological needs like food and water, safety, love and belonging, esteem and self-actualization. These days, they would be an iPhone for the Just Eat deliveries, secure Wi-Fi for the iPhone, Snapchat on the iPhone for belonging, Insta also on the iPhone for esteem or that lack of, and Be Real for that carefully curated, candid photo posted on your iPhone showing the world how bussin' it is at a day spa. But the bitter truth is that none of these generation-defining activities qualifies as real life. We're going to be looking at the emphasis of real life today. Real life is or was a vertical progression upwards from child to adult, dependent to breadwinner, eagerly taking on more responsibility as you went, whether that was the satisfaction of taking your parents out for dinner with your first paycheck or giddy pride at being entrusted with your very own council wheelie bin. But these days, those vertical structures have crumbled away because nobody wants to grow up. Instead, young people rely on their horizontal peer group to normalize the extended adolescence of not picking up the phone and continuing to sleep in a single bed surrounded by Marvel posters at the age of 30. And of course, if anyone dares bandy around the term adulting, their digital tribe will close ranks and reassure them there's no such word. So I just thought it was a cool little article, and... again, what has this got to do with us? This is a show about Bible stuff, right? Well, as I mentioned at the beginning, we are you know, as we learn the essence of what it means to walk out the Torah, we then start to build a picture of what it means to walk out a generational faith, how people are to expect and what to anticipate with regards to raising children, teenagers, and even applying these principles to ourselves. It's really important to know what we're fighting against and what it is we're setting ourselves apart from, because we often talk about what it means to be holy, and we know that's not a holier than now situation. This is a setting apart, what marks us out, what makes us different. So what makes us different from being subject to these generational traps and trappings, and how do we combat this principle of a denigration of not only the family unit, but the individuals within that. So looking at younger people, it's like, okay, we can quite often lose our dialogue. We can lose our connection to the generations below us, whether it's through ignorance or apathy. And I think it's important to have an honest look at the sufferings of different age groups and what we can do to combat that, essentially. And again, I don't have the answers. I'm not even a parent. I'm arguably not a teenager anymore. So it's but it doesn't mean to say it's not an area that doesn't fascinate me, because of primarily the impacts of technology, social media, and culture in general. It's a heavy time. I came across this video. It's a bit old, 6 years old. It's from a TED talk. Teen stress from a teen perspective. So it's all well and good saying, come on guys, sort it out, get a grip, just get a job, get earning, get out the gaff. I get it. But I think it would be beneficial to see, like, what is this perspective that they're having, like, for all of this progression within society? Why is it this generation that's suffering so badly? You know, for all the leaps and bounds that we've made in terms of education, access to information and technology, why are they suffering so badly? And it's within this conversation we'll touch on some of the heavier elements when it comes to emotional and mental situations, self-harming, things of that nature. And I'll let it play out and we'll chat.
Hi, I'm Michaela. I'm a junior in high school. I love to play the violin and piano. And I'm stressed. I'm stressed about homework because I have so much homework to do every day, and every class has hours of homework. I'm also stressed about not getting enough sleep, both due to the homework I have to do and extracurriculars I do. From the school newspaper to the speech team to playing the violin in the youth symphony orchestra, it all adds stress because it all takes time. Another thing you may know we high schoolers are stressed about is having all those college applications submitted. I thought all high schoolers were just like me, stressed about all these things and not getting enough sleep. So I decided to ask them. I created an anonymous survey, and I sent it out to my friends, school, and students I knew in other countries around the world.
So one of the first things that struck me about this is the this element of stress in relation to schoolwork, homework, college applications, and this pressure that a lot of young people face with regards to knowing and going in a direction in accordance to a academic situation. And it's not me poo-pooing schooling or academia. My first thought is about, where is that pressure coming from? What does that pressure lead to? Like, what are they trying to achieve? Are they conforming to a narrative that is built in and around a community that isn't based on biblical principles, that they're, you know, living the life in accordance to what the world suggests we should do? Or are you coming from a biblical perspective where you're growing and nurturing your child in a way that is in accordance to the strengths and weaknesses that God has created that child to be in, and that pressure is coming from a place of just wanting to do your best in God's eyes? Now, it doesn't mean to say, I'm not trying to negate those in the world that aren't trying to nurture their child and put them in the right place because, oh, they're evil and they're just sending them into Babylon and all of that. Like, it's not quite what I'm saying, but it's just a case of identifying for me, like, what is it you're trying to achieve with your child? Like, how are we trying to facilitate an environment that nurtures and gives them the best chance of development in a sound way, whilst maintaining a pressure and a realism to what is going on in the world? You know, it's just my heart goes out to a young person who's feeling this pressure and this strain and the stress of not having time because they're doing homework and applying for stuff and feeling this burden. And it's like, these are meant to be like formative years of enjoyment and love, and you've got a lot of time to be responsible for things, a lot of time where there's a lot of serious stuff. And it just breaks my heart to see these young people going into this system and being absolutely rinsed out for what?
About 160 people filled it in. 160 high schoolers who I thought were just like me. After reading the responses, I realized that many of them were stressed about the same things I was. But what surprised me was how open they were about the other things that were stressing them out. The things they weren't telling other people. They weren't sharing these things with their parents, friends, therapists, or counselors. They weren't sharing these things with anyone. But they shared them with me. You know what those things were? Let me give you four examples. One student, who's gay, shared that they didn't want to tell their friends and family that they were gay because they were afraid that their friends and family would leave them and move on. Another student, who's transgender, shared that they've already told their parents they want to have surgery done to change their gender, that they were suicidal. But their parents didn't want them to have the surgery. They didn't approve. And to that student, they didn't seem to care that they were suicidal. The impact? They have attempted suicide three times. Three times. They used my survey to talk about it, to reach out and share with me, because they didn't feel that they were being listened to.
I'm not going to get into the depths of those subjects today, but what it evoked for me is, you ever seen a child in a shop with their parents and the parent ask the child what it is they want to have? Do you want, they give them like a choice, a wide choice of things that they can have. 9 times out of 10, it ends badly. And the reason why I say this, I believe that there's a sentiment where it comes to provision and discipline with children where, all right, treating them like all that, like it's all good. I'm not saying being a Scrooge is good, but what I'm saying is when you give a child like too much choice, it becomes really confusing. You do it to an adult and they start losing their head, let alone a younger person. My point being, I believe that the amount of choice and this spectrum of opportunity with regards to identity and possibility within life, it can often be compounding for an individual because they can't make a decision. They don't know who they are. And unfortunately, a lot of this spectrum of choice isn't based in reality. So when they make these choices and decisions and they don't have a foothold, or it doesn't materialize in the way that they anticipate in terms of having substance and meaning and definition, it becomes incredibly disorientating. It becomes incredibly hard to navigate what is already a difficult process: growing up, becoming an adult, finding your identity, finding your strengths, identifying your weaknesses. Life is hard. Life is hard when you've got all your ducks in a row. You start messing with them ducks and then things can fall apart very easily. So my point being is I feel that there's too much on them. There's too much choice. There's too much possibility. And I'm not saying like we need to limit or cap the imaginations or the ambitions or, you know, the desires of what it is we've been created to be, not by any stretch. That's great. Push expectations, push yourself, experience your limits and boundaries. But if you don't have a clear boundary, especially for younger people, well, those boundaries are being defined by social media and culture and not by the word of God, which sounds incredibly religious and zealous, but no, it's reality. It's based on reality. We see this untying taking place generationally, or at least a measure of success is based on material, vapid, unreal situations.
Another response I read was from a student who's been hurting themselves. A student around my age who has been harming themselves since sixth grade. That is for 5 or 6 years, of which they haven't told anyone, not a single person. Now, the last response I would like to share with you all today has impacted me in a big way. What this person shared had me asking, how can I help? How can I reach out to them? Now, this person had so much stress, so much. Now, I'd love to share with you what they wrote, but I care about them too much. What hit me, though, was that they had actually set a date as to when they were going to commit suicide. I was at home reading their words on the screen, and I was upset. And then I saw the date. It was only a week away. I was scared. I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to possibly lose another person at my school or in this world. And to think that they had actually set a date and told me. To this student, I have a message for you. Wherever you are, I see you and I care about you. And all those students who took my survey, and even to those who didn't, I see you and care about you too. Now, after this experience, I found out that many of the students who took my survey were more willing to share with their peers than with their parents, therapists, or counselors, the ones that actually have the degrees to help them. There is so much more young people are not telling and sharing with you. This experience has taught me that this is only the beginning of the conversation. My hope is that together we can do something about this. Thank you.
So a couple of elements towards the end there that I appreciated was the sentiment of how she said that she sees them and she cares about them. And it's the same way that our Father sees us. He sees us and he cares for us. And when you don't know and you're not validated by that principle of having been created and are known and loved by the Most High, that can, well, evidently leave a massive gap in one's self. And what was the other thing she said at the end? Dialogue. If that dialogue isn't there, I guess it becomes harder to have these conversations, to know what's going on. So with that being said, we're in the faith. We have Yeshua, Messiah. We have salvation. We have a promise of eternal life, of a heavenly rest and existence with the creator of the universe and all that pertains to creation. Amazing. So does that mean we are exempt from these tropes, depression, fear, anxiety, worry. If you speak to your brothers and sisters in the faith for long enough, I would say it suggests otherwise. And the word actually says otherwise as well. Just a few scriptures here on those areas. Psalm 34, when the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. 2 Corinthians, but God who comforts the downcast. 1 Peter, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. We've got some more. Philippians 4, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Proverbs 12, anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. Psalm 34, the Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. So the word would suggest that our relationship and our dependency on the Father is intrinsic to this battle of the flesh and being subject to the world. You talk oppression, depression, anxiety, fear, worry, being crushed in spirit. This all sounds very much like being in a depressed state or being in an anxious state. So what I'm doing is entering into a very, I guess, fuzzy area where perchance the expectations is that we are running down the rainbow road with sunshine and happiness, singing Kumbaya every day. But the reality is we've got a lot of folks who do struggle with these areas. And it could be from the previous life. It could be stuff that happens whilst they're on the walk. It's such a big area. But again, I think there needs to be a degree of honesty to say, yes, I have Yeshua. Yes, I'm in the faith. Yes, I have a hope and an expectation of things yet seen. However, I struggle with being down or being despondent or being worrisome. And whilst I wouldn't advocate conforming to this overall narrative of kind of compartmentalized, victimized diagnosis of this permanent state of like, well, I have this condition and I have this and I have that. This isn't an area in which as followers of Christ walking by the fruits of the Spirit, peace, joy, love, all of these things, they're not congruent with each other. They can't exist. So we need to have an open conversation about it's okay to have times when you're down or crushed in spirit and broken and low. But at the same time, like, we can't stay in that area because these aren't of the spirit. So, yeah, and like I said, this isn't about me having all of the answers about, right, this is how we're going to live a biblically based, happy ever after. This is just a reality in terms of what people are going through in the world today, the pressures that are being put on us and on the younger generation in particular, and saying, look, yeah, it's okay to be down. It's okay to be struggling. It's okay not to be in the best place. But how do we not stay there? And how do we set an example for the younger generations to be like, look, I get it. It's tough. It's hard. The world is awful right now. But however, we have Jesus. We have a faith. We have perseverance. We have endurance. We are overcomers, etc., etc. So I just wanted to, put it out there and say, look, not everyone is waking up in the morning and going, hallelujah, here we go. That's the target. That's the aim. This is the day that the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it all day long. But at the same time, like, your feelings and your emotions are going to be indicative of a lot of things. Now, we'll get into a little bit more, because I know some people will say, well, it can be a chemical, it can be a traumatic thing, it can be a physiological thing, it can be a demonic thing, it can be spirit. There's a lot of variables to this contribute. I'm really aware of that, so I'm not here to like put a sweeping diagnosis over the whole thing. However, it's just good to have a look at. So one element that was touched on in the article and within that conversation is, I think, one of the biggest boogeymen in this situation, particularly when it comes to young people and adults, we're all included in this one, social media. Now, as I was talking about, like, this element of choice and being compounded by having too much going on, the older I get, the more I just crave simplicity. I just, a simple life, simple problems, simple equations, let's just keep it simple. And a lot of this is based on reality, real experience, tangible things that happen in your day to day, whether it be relational, whether it be environmental, whether it be things at work, challenges, obstacles, failures, successes, real stuff. Guess what I'm trying to say is, a lot of the pressure that I see coming on to younger people is coming from a fantasy land. It doesn't even exist. It's this digital behemoth of garbage that is a matrix pixelated egregore of a demon. And you're like, wow, a lot of these pressures, a lot of these things that are contributing aren't even based on reality. It's writing, it's screens, it's videos, it's influencers, it's social media. So for me, I just wanted to focus a little bit particularly on social media, and let's go straight for the brainy source, Yale Medicine. Again, I'm not an expert, but I hear that Yale's like an official gaffe over in the States. So, how social media affects your teen's mental health, a parent's guide. Setting ground rules and keeping the conversation going is essential, say Yale experts. This is quite a big article, so I'll try and scan through as nicely as possible. Mental health issues among teens have been rising for more than a decade, and some experts wonder how much social media use is to blame. If you're a parent questioning if and how you should monitor the way your teenager uses social media, you're not alone. In the spring of 2023, United States Surgeon General Vivek Murthy, MD MBA, released an advisory called Social Media and Youth Mental Health, in which he says there is growing evidence that social media is causing harm to young people's mental health. Soon after, the American Psychological Association issued its own health advisory. The issue is complicated. However, while there are indicators that it can have a profound risk of harm to teens, social media use aimed at making healthy connections with others may actually be beneficial to some people. Dr. Murthy's report indicates that more research is needed to fully understand the impact of social media. For parents, this means there are no easy answers. The issues we face now with social media are similar to those we faced when television came out, says Linda Mays, MD, chair of the Yale Child Study Center. She explains that, as with TV watching, there are pros and cons to social media for young people. So how do we help parents filter out the parts that may be detrimental? So I actually started thinking about the premise where, you know, it's going to... social media use itself, it's no good just saying it's an evil, it's just demonic and it's all evil. For example, on one end of the spectrum, you could have a very disciplined, intelligent, proactive young person and adult who is fascinated by, I don't know, like mechanics or chemistry or something that's good. And social media, their feed is full of all of this subject, and it helps them to grow in that area, and they love it. They become more enamored with it. It helps them in their progression. Like, great, like, awesome. However, on the other end, if you've got somebody who's influenced by, you know, violence, sex, all of the bad stuff, right? And then that algorithm starts amplifying that principle. What are the influences and the impacts that are going to have on that individual? I mean, it goes without saying. So, you know, whilst this is all being said, I'm not saying it's, you know, throw the baby out of the bathwater. However, we need to look at the overall net positive and say, right, it's probably not having a good effect on the younger generation if we look at the issues taking place. As a parent, you might ask yourself, what specifically about social media use can have a negative impact on my teen? It raises a variety of concerns, including the amount of time adolescents spend on the platform, which is massive. It's literally like the volume of time. The type of content they consumed or are exposed to. So are they seeing things that they just aren't meant to be seeing? The word tells us that we are to guard our gates, but yet you walk into that world and then you are literally on the front line in a very vulnerable position. And, you know, I speak to many people my age or older who are so gutted and devastated about the things that they've either seen or done or been a part of in their former life, and just have the most utmost deepest regret, like heartbreak. And younger folks today, like, they're seeing like terrible things, and they may not be monitored in doing so, and it's, you can see the effects that it's having. And the degree to which their online interactions disrupt activities essential for health, such as sleep and exercise, it points out that social media can also affect young users in different ways, depending on their strengths and vulnerabilities as individuals, as well as their cultural, historical and social economic backgrounds. The report stresses that the brain is going through a highly sensitive period between the ages of 10 and 19, when identities and feelings of self-worth are forming. Frequent social media use may be associated with distinct changes in the developing brain, potentially affecting such functions as emotional learning and behavior, impulse control, and emotional regulation. Like, really basic but super important stuff. And if that's not being developed in the right way, and this is what I keep saying about reality, things being based on reality, you know, growing up, it'd be a case of, you know, I was still part of that. Like, I had computer consoles in my home and I'd spend a lot of time playing that. But at the same time, like, I would go outside a lot, go on adventures, build dens, you know, fall out of trees, play football, you know, have relationships, develop, make bonds, like all of these critical things, which I don't think you really have to like think about doing when your world is just normal and regular and how it was before all this digital stuff. It was just how it was. You just got on. You just grew up and developed and had an environment to do so. Was it perfect? No, but at the same time, like, there was scope to make mistakes, to fall over and pick yourself back up, to be told off, to have boundaries, to go and experience life. But now I'm just looking at these kids and they're just sat in their gaming chairs, speaking on headsets, watching things that they shouldn't be watching, and coming out retarded. And I mean literally retarded, undeveloped, uncommunicative, indisciplined. And I'm not having a go at the children. Like, this is the byproduct of all of this progression, so-called. So my heart is like, how are we as followers of Christ going against this grain? Okay, I don't know the answers. I don't know what the recommendations are. I'm just saying, like, I don't want this future for myself, for my children, you are willing, and for those around me. And how do we navigate this in a way that isn't dictatorial, isn't Amish, living under a rock somewhere? Like, how do we navigate this? Because it's here, it's on the way, and it's getting worse. I'm sorry, but this is going to get worse before it gets better, if it gets better at all. And I don't mean to be pessimistic. I'm just trying to be as realistic to this as possible. You know, that age-old question as believers, how much do we expose our children to the realities of the world? Were they not compromising their purity, but be not leaving them vulnerable to the wiles of the enemy? It's a serious question. And a lot of this is the mechanics of how we're navigating this in this generation. It used to, you know, if you look at it almost from a wider perspective, it'd be like, right, be careful, son, when you go out there, there's the big bad wolf and there's the weather, and you need to be careful of all of these things. And he'd be like, okay, dad, and he goes out and he finds his way. This is that version of that. It's like, right, son, daughter, like, there's some wild stuff going on here, and I need to help you navigate this. Potential benefits, which I've sort of touched on. What are the potential harms? All right, so over the last decade, increasing evidence has identified the potential negative impact of social media on adolescents, according to a research study of American teens aged 12 to 15. Those who use social media over 3 hours each day face twice the risk of having negative mental health outcomes, including depression and anxiety symptoms. Again, I don't know the clinical relationship between what causes this or what contributes to depression and anxiety with regards to using it. I mean, I can take a guess when it comes to comparison, feeling less than, not knowing if you're going to be good enough, peer pressure, all of these variables, which, by the way, all are like legitimate rites of passage that we go through as teenagers and young adults, but in a way that isn't so viciously sharp, visceral, and quick and brutal. The advisory states that the other studies point to a higher relative concern of harm in adolescent girls and those already experiencing poor mental health, as well as for particular health outcomes such as cyberbullying-related depression, body image, and disordered eating disorders, and poor sleep quality linked to social media use. Hopefully I'll do a show one day about body image and body dysmorphia and the impact of culture on that. I don't know if it's that relevant, but anyway. What's more, the social media algorithms are built to promote whatever you seem interested in. If a teen searches for any kind of mental health conditions, such as depression or suicide, it's going to feed them information about those things. So soon they may begin to think that everyone around them is depressed or thinking about suicide, which is not necessarily good for mental health, of course. I think in the interest of time, we'll leave this. I recommend like checking this article out. I could sit here all day doing this, but I know we've only got so much time. But I just wanted to, to show that there is very, very compelling evidence with regards to correlatory impact of social media and the ills of it, and how it is casting a great shadow on younger folk and causing them to feel less than and all the rest of it. Let's have a look at this one. This is from a YouTube channel called Med Circle. Again, I don't know the channel, don't know the people on it, but I just thought there were some interesting points raised in this, so we'll take a look.
And listening to this, who would say, yeah, but back in my day, we didn't have any of this depression or anxiety. You just sucked it up and dealt with it and moved on with your life.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's sort of, unfortunately, how I was raised, mm-hmm. and a lot of us were raised. I think, you know, We have to remember something, and this actually makes me feel old by saying this. Remember like when like your parents or grandparents used to be like, when I was a kid, mm-hmm. right? Well, I can't relate to children now because I didn't grow up in the age of internet. I didn't grow up in the age of social media. It was a completely different environment.
Thank goodness.
It was very different, yeah. right? But now we're seeing this tremendous increase in mood disorders. And I want to say something that's really, really important is it's not just about the lack of resilience of the child, which may play a part into this, because people are saying the children are just less resilient, they're weaker, right? They're more susceptible to mood disorders because of that. That certainly may be a part, because parents are doing a lot more for their kids and sheltering them in a major way. But when you look at history and the challenging times in history, the Great Depression, World War II, the Vietnam era, the tumultuous 60s and 70s, financial crises, the Cold War, the rates of depression were not higher than they are now. So my point is that there's something going on now with our children that is increasing depression. And one is social media, one is parenting styles. But if you look at history, people did deal with some difficult things, but there was not a noted increase in suicidality or depression. It was a fascinating statistic.
So I'm not understanding this 100%. So when something devastating happens, like the depression in the 1929, there was not there wasn't an increase in children who were depressed.
Correct.
See, I think this is something to do with things that are based in reality. When I say that, like our four senses, where we can actually process better, we can actually take in the experience and let our bodies and minds, our souls and spirit digest and deal with it. Whereas I think a lot of the digital stuff is extremely abstract and isn't actually happening in real time. It's via a screen a lot of the time. So whether it is, seeing things you shouldn't, whether it's cyberbullying, whether it's any of those areas where it's vicariously through a screen, that's where this pressure or this version of life can start to develop and become too much for some. Whereas if you do have like an actual war or a famine or a depression or any of these terrible things, which by all means are really hard things, at the same time you're actually going through it. I think there's something in that.
But now, aren't we seeing an increase of children who are depressed?
That's the point. We're seeing an increase in children that are depressed now. So there's almost this, I think that's difficult for parents to say, like, well, why do they have it so tough? What's going on? Back in the day, we dealt with X, Y, and Z. I walked to school in the snow uphill both ways, and I wasn't depressed. Why is my child depressed now? The point is, we can't relate to what they're dealing with now, and it's a very different landscape and a very different environment that they're dealing with. And I sincerely believe that it has a lot to do with the lack of social interaction, interpersonal social interaction, free play. Parenting styles have changed dramatically where they're overprotective of their kids. The landscape is different now, and we have to remember that as parents. We can't compare to our generation. And that's my point.
It's a really good point. That's a really good point. I've noticed.
And hence it comes back to the point I was trying to make before about relationships and community and going through life in a way that's you know, really real. And I've said it oftentimes before, like, our walk is primarily spiritual, of course, and the implications are physical on earth as it is in heaven and all of that. And The more we go down this road, the more I'm seeing such a practical application to Torah, to the Word of God, and how supernatural and incredible life is, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and how all of these are conforming to our sanctification and God's plan for this world. Nothing goes to waste. Everything's being used. And, you know, I take solace in that, to know that how are we to be applying what we learn on a Saturday for the rest of the week? How are we taking what we see in the Torah portions or in the rest of the word? How are we applying this to our relationships as brothers, sisters, husbands, wives, and parents? So that's, you know, my main aim, as I said, is not to point fingers and not to say like we're doing this right or wrong. I don't know, because this is generally quite a new phenomenon. And what's fascinating is if you combine these two principles of a new phenomenon where it comes to technology, social media, and the pressures of that, but then also how we're walking down the ancient path. So, you know, that's part of my question is, are we just to completely separate ourselves from this kind of environment and situation? Is there a line at which we should be using these things? Or is it time to get out of Dodge and just, you know, there's a school of thought that a lot of these, I guess you could just, states of being is potentially sinful. To be stressed, to be worried, to be fearful, to be anxious. Now, I'm not saying if you feel any of these things that you're in sin, like I'm not suggesting that, but if your general state of being is based in this area, then it's hard to suggest that you're, you know, walking with the indwelling and the fullness of the Spirit in your life. And that's not to say anybody is at all times, like, of course, but, you know, so that's the question. Like, I hold a high standard to myself. If I'm worrying too much, I find that I feel like I'm sinning against God. Like, a lot of our faith, a lot of our principles are based on promises, things that haven't yet come to pass, things that we're holding on to, whether it be in this life or the next. And that's a really hard, that can be really hard to deal with, really hard to hold on to. And I get it. I really do. So that's my heart is can we have these conversations, not where we're mollycoddling and validating a way of life or a state of being? How are we having an honest conversation and building and encouraging each other to identify these things and to move away from it? Particularly with the younger folk in our communities, in our fellowships, in our churches, you know. So again, a massive topic, and I'm sure there's loads of stuff that I've missed or forgotten. And as I said, I definitely don't have all the answers, but I hope in some way that this might have shone some light, brought some attention to an area that you may have not considered. Again, I'm not necessarily looking for you know, please put on the comments what you like. That's great in that, but at least like have a think about it, have a conversation with people around you. And, you know, if there was anything in there that you agree with or disagree with, please get involved. Let me know. Is there an area in this which we could take a bit more of a look at? Again, I always say the same thing. I'm restricted to time and resource a lot of the time, so I can't really do as much justice to these subjects as I would like to. Is there more of a biblical based principle and answer? Like, am I overcomplicating this and being too delicate? Or, you know, because I do believe that so to surmise, for all of the jargon, for all of the talk and the speculation, it's my belief And I hold this as a biblical facet to what I hold on to, is that the human condition and an experience is all encompassed by the seven spirits of Yah. So wisdom, understanding, power, knowledge, fear of the Lord, all of those contribute to us being able to navigate this, not only this world, but the spiritual as well. And each of these spirits will empower and guide us in all truth. And I believe that it's not necessarily just an ethereal, esoteric experience of gliding through the world. I think there's a very tangible and very real personification and manifestation of the seven spirits of God that help us to overcome all of these obstacles in the world. So be of good cheer, for Yeshua came to overcome the world. Cast your burdens on him, and I'm sure he'll make your way light and unburdensome. So with that being said, I thank you once again for taking the time to watch. As ever, get involved. It's much appreciated. I hope and I pray that this recording reaches you well. But for the meantime, from our house to yours, shalom. We love you. God bless.